Prince Harry and Meghan have new Netflix projects. William and Kate finish their Easter break, and an embarrassing moment for Prince Harry. I'm Jack Royston, Newsweek's chief royal correspondent, and this is Newsweek's Royal Report. Hello, listeners, and welcome to the show. Prince Harry and Meghan have new shows coming to Netflix at an unconfirmed date in the future. One will be about polo. This is a sport that obviously Harry loves and he plays it regularly. It includes raising money for Centre Barley, his charity, a charity he co-founded anyway. And on that note, he was on horseback doing precisely that in a game against his friend Nacho Figueres on Friday in Florida. So I'm going to say a little bit more about that later. But first, back to the announcements of the new projects. The polo show, it's one of two, aims to give a bit of a kind of behind-the-scenes access to the world of polo. So, you know, it's an interesting concept. This is a sport that people mostly don't know a huge amount about, and it doesn't have that kind of, like, die-hard mainstream spectator sport dimension to it that obviously, like, football, rugby and cricket and tennis have in Britain, and American football, you know, NFL and baseball and basketball have in the States, and hockey. So the press release says it is the show that is shot primarily at the US Open Polo Championship in Wellington, Florida, at the USPA National Polo Center, and in partnership with Broadwalk Pictures. It will provide viewers with unprecedented access to the world of professional polo. Known primarily for its aesthetic and social scene, the series will pull the curtain back on the grit and passion of the sport, capturing players and all it takes to compete at the highest level. So this is a world that obviously most people know in reality next to nothing about. Perhaps they see pictures of royal family members playing polo, you know, on the internet or in magazines, and know a little bit about it through that. But obviously, you know, most people mostly know little about it. Obviously, anything to do with horses is very expensive, and polo is absolutely no exception. So it is a bit of an elite rich person's world. And in that vein, I think there's an opportunity here and a risk potentially as well. So the opportunity is that this is genuinely a new thing, a new idea. I don't recall another look behind the curtain of elite polo, but it will have to grab audiences somehow. I don't think they're guaranteed an audience just because they're doing something that Harry loves, or even that Harry and Meghan both love. You know, the audience, your viewers have to love watching it as well. Especially given how exclusive and expensive this world is, I think they'll need to get the tone absolutely perfectly right. I don't think they can just, in 2024, celebrate how exceptionally amazing and godlike these mega-rich polo players are riding around in the sunshine on horses. So it's great that they raise money for charity. That's brilliant. Equally, we're still going through a cost of living crisis, and we're, you know, it's like we're virtually on the brink of World War III. A lot of people are still struggling in all kinds of ways with all kinds of things. And it was less than a year ago that everyone piled in on Oprah and The Rock over Maui. So it's probably fair to say doing charity work does not in and of itself get you off the hook in the modern world. So tone is therefore going to be really important. And I do think there's an age-old formula here that they could follow, which will help a lot. And that's to basically send themselves up and send up this world as well. Like, don't just worship the polo players and the polo circuit and the polo world. Like, make light of it as well. People love Harry when he's funny. That's when he's at his most charming, and it diffuses the kind of flamboyant wealth bomb much more effectively than purely the presence of charity fundraising alone. Like, the charity cause is fantastic. It's great that it's there. People love it when stars raise money for charity. But as Oprah and The Rock proved, charity alone is not a shield against allegations of privilege anymore. And yeah, people know that, you know, all rich people do raise money for charity. Like, Jeffrey Epstein raised money for charity. Rupert Murdoch, the Murdoch Empire engages in philanthropy and gives money to charity. It doesn't necessarily mean you're a good person automatically. What Britain's most famous sex offender, Jimmy Savile, did a huge amount of charity work. It is not a guarantee that somebody is going to be a good person. And, you know, there's this idea that rich people do it to absolve their sins, but you can still sink yourself if you come across as though you think that raising money for charity makes you better than everyone else. So this is why a little bit of good old-fashioned English self-deprecation would do Harry a world of good. We're very good at this in England. We love to send ourselves up and make fun of ourselves and put ourselves down. It's what we do. And if you can be seen to visibly laugh at yourself, people will warm to you because it shows you don't think you're better than other people. And actually, the upper classes in Britain have been doing this for years. Former Prime Minister Boris Johnson built his entire political career and managed to present himself as a man of the people, despite being from a very privileged background, by basically making a clown out of himself everywhere he went. If you get too serious about everything, then the risk is you slip into that saviour role. You know, like Harry doesn't want people to think that he's a white saviour. Right, or that he has a white savior complex. That's not healthy. It's not good for his image, and he needs to steer clear of it. Princess Diana, possibly the most loved royal, maybe ever, certainly in modern times, was celebrated by society as a savior. But, you know, it was something that other people said about her. Harry's wanted to walk in Diana's footsteps because she's his mother, because he loved her, because he lost her, and all of that is completely legitimate. But you do have to let other people say you're a saviour. You can't kind of present yourself as the saviour to the world. So I think this show can work as long as Harry keeps it low-key and light and funny, and if there's some genuine intrigue, good characters among the other kind of polo players who he meets and gets to know and all the rest of it. People could get into the world of polo and start really kind of liking it and being fascinated by it. But conflict is a huge driver behind storytelling. So I'm interested in where the conflict and the drama is going to come from here, because polo isn't as much of a kind of spectator sport like football or baseball or basketball, where a huge amount of emotion rides on the final score. So, for example, if you think about Welcome to Wrexham, which for those who haven't seen it, Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds bought a football club in Britain and Wales called Wrexham FC, and then they decided that they needed to get promotion to a higher division in football. They needed to win the division they were in so that they could move up to the better one in order to be financially viable. So that placed like a huge amount of pressure on them to be successful. Also, alongside that financial imperative for them, the community in Wrexham poured their heart and soul into the outcome of every game, and the show really conveyed the fact that the fans invested not just their emotions, but their entire identity in the success of the club. So you knew that failure would make Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds hate figures in Wrexham. And they were chasing something really specific. You know, that goal of promotion to a higher league is a concrete thing they wanted. And then they had something concrete stopping them from getting it, which was that when they first took over the club, the team were not performing well. They were losing games. So you were watching a dream slip through their fingers, and that created suspense and tension. So if they lean into the sporting side of polo in the show, then what's the goal? You know, what are they chasing? What's their equivalent of promotion to the higher league? Where is the drama and the conflict going to come from in this story? On the other hand, if they don't think they're getting quite enough out of the sporting side of it, they could make it more social. You know, Selling Sunset has plenty of drama and conflict. In fact, as a kind of sidebar to the lifestyle porn, which is the kind of fundamental thing of looking at all of these incredibly massive, expensive houses with fantastic swimming pools and bringing in expensive artworks to stage the house and all the rest of it. But the lifestyle fix that people got out of that show is probably a little more concrete in a way than anything polo can offer, because obviously everybody has somewhere they live, and unless they're unfortunate enough, obviously, to be homeless. But the people who are the audience for that show all have houses, and therefore they can dream of owning better houses, and therefore they can look at the incredible houses in Selling Sunset and think, oh gosh, I wish I lived there. And that's how it works. But polo is like, it's such a specific thing. And if you're not into horse riding, then that takes a big dimension away from it. So, you know, what about the social drama? I mean, Selling Sunset is probably too much drama and conflict for Harry and Meghan to go anywhere near that level of drama. There's no way that they'll get involved in anything that's genuinely anywhere near as messy as Selling Sunset. So how much drama and conflict can they actually tolerate in the social dimension to this storytelling? The drama and conflict doesn't have to come from the social interactions between the players. They don't have to do a Selling Sunset kind of, you know, everyone's falling out with each other and, you know, being gossipy vibe. They don't have to do that. But there does have to be some kind of drama and conflict and suspense and tension coming from somewhere in order to capture people's interest. It can't just be, here's Harry playing polo. Isn't he brilliant? He does it all for charity. What a swell guy. I don't think that will grab people. And I think there's a real risk that actually it could look really self-indulgent and elitist just because of how rich you have to be into polo. So I'm completely open-minded about this. I'm interested to see which way they take it. And I think it 100% could work. But I do think that there's a bit of a bear trap in the middle of it if they don't play it right. But we got some nice photos of Harry playing polo while Meghan watched from the sidelines in Florida on Friday. So the announcement was Thursday. So we going into Friday, we knew that polo was going to be a big part of their future projects for Netflix. And then we had Harry playing polo, which obviously worked quite nicely. Harry was with his friend, Nacho Figueras, who was on the opposing team. Harry scored, helping his team win. They won 3-1. And Harry and Meghan kissed on the podium while lifting the trophy. So that gave social media something to work with, and it all went viral on TikTok and all the rest of it. So then the second show they're doing is a lifestyle show. Meghan's going to front it, and it will be interesting to see. We obviously had a lot of Meghan through her podcast archetypes, but that was audio only. So we kind of heard her, but we didn't actually get to see her in front of camera, just, you know, behaving naturally in a way that kind of requires a degree of performance, but isn't, you know, but not in the context of an interview about her life. So obviously back when she was doing Suits, we had season after season after season of Meghan in front of camera performing. And then being a royal, you are in front of camera and there is a degree of performance in a royal visit. Absolutely. You know, then probably not being completely entirely their true authentic selves because they have to watch what they say. They can't put a foot wrong. But needless to say, we still had, we could see Meghan in front of camera acting naturally, and we kind of haven't really had that so much recently. Whereas this, it sounds like it's going to be a season, multiple episodes, so it's going to be regularly lots and lots of Meghan behaving, you know, presumably fairly naturally, being herself. So that'll be quite interesting to see how that all goes and whether they pull it off. We are told it's going to be a celebration of the joys of cooking and gardening, entertaining and friendship. So, you know, it sounds like this is going to be nice and light, uncontroversial, and it's just going to be like a kind of nice, fun, entertaining show. So that all sounds good. It's being made in conjunction with a production company called the Intellectual Property Corporation, which is a bonkers name for an entertainment brand. But there we go. Who, you know, doesn't really matter. They don't need to be the stars of the show anyway. And some of their projects have been a whole world away from how this sounds. So, for example, they did a show called Night Stalker, which I vaguely remember. I was trying to think whether I actually saw it, and I don't think I did in the end, but I do remember it coming out. It's about a serial killer called Richard Ramirez. However, they have done, you know, there's actually a bunch of kind of heavy stuff in their back catalogue, but not all of it is. Some of it's quite lighthearted. And I assume that Meghan's project will be closer to a show they did called Selena Plus Chef, which is Selena Gomez cooking, basically, and being taught by professional chefs how to cook and how to cope with crises in the kitchen and that kind of thing. So presumably, I would imagine Meghan has watched that show and thought, this is brilliant. I love it. I can do that. I'll do what Selena Gomez does here, and it will be fantastic. And it probably will be. In both cases, though, it'll be really interesting to see how it all lands with reviewers and audiences. Obviously, they're going to get huge amounts of interest from the media, because there always is with everything that Harry and Meghan do. And that can be a blessing as well as a curse. It can put quite a lot of pressure on them to be the kind of best show on TV, to, you know, top all the charts. And in reality, most stars don't manage to be at the absolute top of their game all the time. And they're actually not expected to be. if they land one or two or three fantastic projects over their career, then that's more than enough, and people will love them for it, and they can have some duds and some stuff that doesn't work and no one really cares. But it's just the amount of attention on Harry and Meghan and everything they do. So, you know, it'd be that absolute like zenith of the TV industry, which is so competitive, might actually not be Harry and Meghan's most natural place in this business. Their natural place in the TV pecking order might actually be some way below that, in which case some expectation management would be fantastic to just kind of warn people not to expect these to be like knockout award-winning shows. And personally, I think that's totally fine. I don't think they need to be. They don't need to go out and win awards. It's completely fine to just make some entertaining telly that people like watching. They could do, though, with people, you know, with giving people something fun, something lighthearted, and something just successful enough to add some shine back onto them. If they can land that, then I think they'll be happy and they can walk away feeling that they're on to a winner. And who knows, maybe they might even get commissioned back for multiple seasons and it could turn into like a long-running thing, and that would be brilliant for them. And on that note, I'm going to take a quick break. Please remember to rate and review The Royal Report on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your favourite shows. When I'm back, Kate and William's family Easter break has come to an end as the kids go back to school.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome back to the show. William and Kate spent Easter away at Anmer Hall, their country retreat in Norfolk. This is in the east of England. And they spent some quiet time as Princess of Wales continues to undergo chemotherapy for the cancer that she announced towards the end of March. So she has, of course, been off work, recovering from major abdominal surgery in January was the first thing. So at that point, they didn't know she had cancer, but she had major abdominal surgery. And then subsequently, after that, they diagnosed her with cancer. Now, the holidays have given the family some time to just be together. You know, William and Kate spend time with the kids, George, Charlotte and Louis, and focus inward on quality time and just enjoying being in each other's company. Now, though, Easter is over. Obviously, the Easter Sunday was a long time ago, but the school break obviously continues on, and it has just ended for William and Kate's kids. They go to school called Lambrook, which went back on Wednesday. And William is heading back to work, as many parents around Britain have been doing this week. My own son's school also went back this week, so I understand how they feel in that respect, though obviously I can only imagine how difficult the actual health situation that they've been going through must have been. In the prince's case, he is going back to a project about preventing food waste. So he's going to visit a charity called Surplus to Supper. Now, this is an organization in a place called Surrey, which it works to gather up leftover food that's basically at risk of winding up in the bin. So I'm assuming this is going to be from kind of restaurants and cafes and maybe supermarkets. And then it redistributes that food to places where it's needed. And William will then go on to a youth centre, youth club in West London, which receives some of the food from Surplus to Supper and passes it around among the children and young people who use youth clubs. So great cause. I think it's a fantastic idea. It's like horrific how much food just winds up getting thrown away just because it's kind of just gone past its use by date, or it's about to go past its use by date. When we all kind of know, I feel, that actually like you can eat it a little bit past the use by date. You can, can't you? It doesn't go straight off. You know, they play it very safe, and you can tell, you know, if you give it a smell, you can tell if it's off. Don't throw it in the bin, get it somewhere where it's needed. So just to give a bit of an indication of Surrey, people obviously won't know, but it is a kind of middle-class commuter belt. It's outside London. It's what part of what we call the home counties. The home counties are all the counties that surround London. So Surrey is kind of, it's a middle-class suburban area. So it's, the idea is he's going to see the food collected in the suburbs be given away in the big city to you know young people who presumably are less well off. So I think it's a good sign to see William going straight back to work, getting straight back stuck into it again. And I think this is an issue that's important to the royal family as a whole. I think Charles has worked with some similar projects that are about ending food waste. It's certainly environmentally a cause close to his heart. And if William and Kate and the kids had stayed up in Norfolk past the return to school, then obviously that would have caused a lot of worry and concern about whether she was okay. Also, if he'd delayed his return to work, I think the same thing would have happened. If we'd had like a week and no sign of him going back, then people would have started to wonder whether something had gone wrong. So the business as usual feel of this, getting straight back in the swing of things, is definitely going to help reassure fans. It will be interesting to see whether William mentions Kate or whether he gives any update on how she found the Easter break. Hopefully she found it relaxing and hopefully restorative too. In recent visits since her surgery, he's often mentioned her in passing, but without saying anything about her health. So that's one option for him. He could just say something like, Kate thinks this is a great cause. Kate, you know, thinks food waste is terrible and, you know, it's great to see all this food go somewhere it's needed, or something like that. Another option would be to give a genuine update on how she's doing, whether her recovery is going well, and, you know, an actual bit of health news. But the palace did say that they weren't going to be giving a running commentary. So I personally suspect that option is fairly unlikely. Another option, though, lies somewhere in the middle, which is to give a kind of half update that engages with how they spent Easter. Something like, oh, it was nice for Kate to get away from it all, and the kids spent lots of time outdoors. Kate had some relaxation time, and she loved being able to focus on the kids. Something like that, which doesn't actually contain any factual health information, but does engage with the question of how Easter went. And in so doing, provides an additional layer of reassurance that there's nothing for people to worry about, and no one's hiding anything, and that things are all just progressing as planned. I suspect this could be a good option for them. Whether they take it or not is another matter, but I do think that it will help if they can make sure they're staying on top of the public mood and the public atmosphere around Kate's recovery, and steering well clear of the kind of speculation that ripped through Twitter in late February and much of March. I think the public mood is very different now that Kate has announced that she has cancer, and people won't shift back easily into posting jokes about her being missing just because it's such a serious subject. And obviously the fear is there that, it, you know, we all hope that she will have a happy outcome to this story, but the fear is always going to be there that she won't. So I think we're unlikely to get that kind of feverish social media memes and jokes and, you know, all of that kind of thing. And I also think we're probably unlikely to get the really bonkers out there conspiracy theories. But at the same time, you know, people are going to want to know at some point whether she's okay and in the clear and ready to come back to work, or whether the situation has become more serious. Obviously, when she made the announcement, she told us that the abdominal surgery that she had had kind of mostly removed the cancer from her system, but she was having what she described as preventative chemotherapy. Now, it doesn't sound from what she said like she's actually formally been put into remission. So people will at some point want to know whether she's in the clear, and whether she's going to come back to work at some stage. However, if I was at Kensington Palace, I would be looking to keep the ship nice and steady in the meantime, so that they have as much control as humanly possible over whether when and whether an actual proper update is given. So I think, you know, an update at some point is inevitable, but they want to give it on their timeline and on their terms when they want to, and not be bounced into doing it by people on social media speculating. So it would be useful to say something. But so far, you know, hopefully all the signs coming from the Wales family are hopefully good. It's great that William's going back to work, and they can now look ahead to Prince Louis's birthday, which is just on the horizon, round about a week away. And on that note, I'm going to take one more quick break. But before I do, a reminder to follow me on X. I'm at Jack_Royston. You will find all my latest stories for Newsweek. And when I'm back, Prince Harry has breached confidentiality in a government lawsuit.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi everyone and welcome back to the show. Prince Harry has been given a 10% discount on the costs he will have to pay in a lawsuit over the decision to strip him of his police protection. However, he also suffered an embarrassment after the judge made public that he had breached an order by sending confidential material to a British politician who advocates for armed forces veterans. Now, Harry apologised and the government quickly was notified by his legal team. However, it is another situation where Harry has made an unforced error in a court case that has left him red-faced. So a quick bit of background. Harry has twice sued the Home Office in an effort to get his Met Police bodyguards, Metropolitan Police, that's the big police force in London, reinstated. He lost both cases. It's all very complicated, but in a nutshell, Harry said they should have consulted with him better and they should have performed an additional risk assessment. But the Home Office said they were the experts in who requires police protection and who doesn't, and they didn't need the extra risk assessment. Additionally, he does still actually get a police team under certain circumstances, including when he's attending official royal events that he has been invited to. So the government won. The judge said they had every right to take the decision to remove Harry's police team, no matter how much the prince may have wished they hadn't. The new bit of information, though, is that in November, Harry passed on confidential information, and we don't know exactly what, and we don't know exactly why, to a man called Johnny Mercer, who is he's a member of Parliament, but he's also the government's veterans minister, and he's a passionate advocate for the armed forces and for veterans, for people who have served. He's also close to Harry after they sat next to each other and they drank beer together during the Invictus Games in September. Now, that was 2 months before Harry gave Johnny Mercer this confidential information. So it does beg the question, why did Harry do this and just how sensitive was the information he passed on? Bear in mind, there are certain aspects of this case that are pretty sensitive, such as who exactly within the royal family gets police protection, what form that police protection takes, stuff that the royals really wouldn't want to enter the public domain. You know, also bear in mind, Harry at one stage wanted the whole case to remain secret, which that was a request that was actually rejected by the court. They obviously, hence why we're all here talking about it. It is, though, it's a little bit extraordinary in fairness to find someone who's been so big on his own privacy and who's applied to keep the whole thing under wraps, then go out and just break confidentiality when it suits him. It does kind of feed into that existing narrative that Harry, it doesn't so much have universal moral principles, but rather he has morals that are flexible depending on his own personal needs. So he has, of course, apologised, and fair play for that. The government felt it meant he should pay a greater share of their costs, but he did not appear to have convinced the judge, basically. The judge is Peter Lane, and this is what he said in his judgment. In November 2023, the claimant, i.e. Prince Harry, breached the terms of the confidentiality ring order. Confidentiality ring meaning, you know, a circle of people who are allowed, who are privy to that information. So he breached the confidentiality ring order by emailing certain information to a partner of Shillings, that's the law firm that represents him, who was not within the confidentiality ring, and to the Right Honourable Johnny Mercer MP. Fortunately, the breach was almost immediately detected by Ms. Fatima Casey, Casey standing for King's Counsel, that's Harry's barrister. Barrister, there's two types of lawyers in Britain, barristers and solicitors. Barristers represent you in the courtroom and speak to the judge. Solicitors do all the casework behind the scenes. So Fatima is his barrister, who acted promptly to inform Ms. Affia, that's Jenny Affia, his solicitor at Shilling, so she does the casework. Affia, in turn, informed the defendant, i.e. the government, as well as taking action to minimise the effects of the breach. So all a bit complicated, but essentially Harry's team cottoned on that Harry had done this. Perhaps they were CC'd in, one might think, to the email, and quickly alerted everybody so that the whole thing could be closed down and damage limitation could be done. The defendant, i.e. the government, nevertheless says that these breaches for which the claimant has apologised caused the defendant to incur unnecessary costs, as can be seen from the correspondence which ensued. The judge didn't seem convinced about the costs part of that. It all came up in an argument over how much of the government's costs Harry should pay, because obviously it's not really fair to pay for taxpayers to front up the money if Harry didn't have a case. Harry said he should get a 50 to 60% discount on what the government paid out. He argued that some of the Home Office disclosure, some of the information they gave to him, wasn't done on time, and that meant he incurred unnecessary costs. The judge also wasn't particularly convinced by that, though he did partially side with Harry. A bit of a boost for Harry. The judge said he would only need to pay 90%. But 90% is still a substantial amount of money. I mean, there's a recent Freedom of Information Act request which suggests that the government's costs were £514,000. So 90% of that would be about £462,000, which is around $575,000. Harry's obviously got his own costs on top of that, which I understand are likely to be a little bit higher. So if you imagine that they're going to be over 500,000, you're still winding up in the ballpark of about £1 million, which is comfortably over $1 million. Unless, of course, Harry manages to appeal, and he is filing an appeal, but I just can't see him being successful. The trial judge denied him permission to appeal. That's not necessarily the end of it. He can now file to the Court of Appeal, a higher court, basically, which his attorney at Shillings has indicated he will be doing. I have to say that I just can't see him being successful from the very word go. This whole case struck me as a hiding to nowhere. Nobody has to like the decisions the government takes. In fact, you know, there's that saying, the trouble with elections is that no matter who you vote for, the government gets in. A great many of their decisions are hated by a great many people. But the question is, have they done something procedurally wrong, which means that they're not, that Harry can force them to retake the decision? Well, you know, highly likely, no, they haven't. I mean, they are entitled to make decisions that Harry hates. They are entitled to make decisions that Harry thinks are grossly unfair. There is not necessarily the right to force them to treat him differently. And he is being treated differently to an ordinary person. You know, ordinary people do not get to demand police protection from the government. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. The Home Office have also been strenuously pointing out that they have actually created a bespoke system for Harry, you know, tailor-made for him, for managing his security, which they haven't necessarily done for other high-profile people, or less high-profile people, but still noteworthy people. You know, it's a very difficult situation for him, but we will see in time. You know, I don't think it will take the Court of Appeal even takes it on, I don't think it will take them long to process it. I think it will probably be wrapped up fairly quickly and it will be a defeat for Harry, but we shall see. That was not the only bit of court news this week, though, concerning Harry. Back in America, the Department of Homeland Security has now complied with a judge's order to hand over paperwork related to his application for a US visa. It is understood that this includes his actual visa application, which has therefore now been given to the judge in the case, which was brought, the whole lawsuit was brought by a conservative think tank called the Heritage Foundation. They want to know whether Harry lied on his visa application about his past drug use, which he talked about extensively in Spare. He was doing drugs like cocaine, which he actually said he didn't like very much, but did do a number of times, magic mushrooms, a hallucinogenic drug called ayahuasca, and cannabis. So the Heritage Foundation say he must have either lied on the application form, in which case they argue that his visa is under threat. Not all immigration experts agree, but that's what they argue. Or they say if he told the truth, then he must have been given favourable treatment. Now, the Department for Homeland Security say everyone has the right to privacy over their immigration records, and therefore they will not be releasing anything Obviously, ultimately, it will be down to the judge to decide, and we shall see where the case goes. So I will endeavour to update on this podcast next time we have some big news on that subject. And that is it for this episode of The Royal Report. Be sure to join me every week when I visit the latest royal headlines, embark on some royal deep dives, and riff on all things royal. Until next time, I'm Jack Royston. Thanks for listening, everyone, and a curtsy to you all.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.